Welcome to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. I'm Steve Alexander, in for Orion Samuelson, who is traveling this week, but you will hear his voice in just a few minutes as he talks with Paul Giorgi about agricultural commodities. Let's begin on Wall Street. For the week, the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ gained ground, up 0.8% for the S&P and 1% for the NASDAQ. The Dow lost about 0.5%. That's five weekly gains in a row for the S&P 500, the longest streak of the year. The 10-year bond ended the week with a yield of about 2.95%, right where it was as we started the week. We went above 3% during the middle of the week. The second quarter reporting season nears its final stretch, with 406 of the companies in the S&P 500 having reported. 78.6% came in above street estimates. Checking commodities, the trade battle fueled concerns about lower demand for crude oil, and oil was down 47 cents, settling at $68.49 a barrel. That's West Texas Intermediate crude, and that's a fifth straight weekly loss for WTI. Brent crude dropped 31 cents at $73.14, the fourth decline in 5 weeks. Gold bounced back from a 17-month low as the dollar fell and the Chinese lifted its currency. Spot gold rose 0.5% to $12.1349. And December gold rose $3.10 at $12.2320. At the Chicago Board of Trade, beans staged a late-session comeback on Friday after touching a one-week low amid worries about the escalating trade war. Corn firmed on expectations that hot, dry weather in the Midwest may limit yield potential. And wheat futures retreated as traders cashed in on profits as concerns about weather-reduced harvests in Europe and the Black Sea region lifted prices sharply earlier in the week. Those concerns came from a Facebook post which turned out to be incorrect, and prices spiked 30 cents, the maximum on one day, before falling back. November soybeans ended 4¾ cents higher on Friday at 9.02¼ a bushel, closing out the week up 1.9%. September corn gained 3 cents on Friday at 3.69¾ a bushel. That's up 2.1% for the week. And wheat futures for September delivery fell 4¼ cents to 5.56¼ a bushel, but for the week, wheat gained 4.9%, the third straight weekly advance. Turning from crops to critters at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, live cattle gained about 2%, settling at $112 a hundred, finishing above the 200-day moving average for the first time in months. September feeder cattle futures rose to $153.25 per hundred. Lean hog futures were mostly higher. October hog futures finished up $1.12.5 to $50.77.5 per hundred. I'll be back with a market expert to explain what happened on Wall Street this week right after this. You're listening to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Welcome back to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. I'm Steve Alexander, in for Orion Samuelson. And joining me on the telephone to try to make sense of all that happened this week on Wall Street is Susan Schmidt. She is a senior portfolio manager for Westwood Holdings in Dallas. Hello, Susan.
Hello.
Lots to choose from. A busy week again. I think probably the flashiest headline happened to be something that you can't talk a lot about, and that's that Apple happened to have a big week, a big moment in time.
Indeed, it did. Apple was the first company to cross the $1 trillion market cap. And so that barrier has now been passed, and that's a big number. And when you think about it, that is actually just a rather impressive. So Apple is once again leading the way as the largest company in terms of market capitalization size out there on the U.S. market.
Yeah, huge. And I saw somebody put up a note saying that, well, if you added Disney and another big stock, I can't remember which one it was, you'd get to about half of where Apple is right now. So that gives an indication of just how big it is.
I think it's a good indicator of how things have changed, too, because when we think about the names of old that we used to perceive as the giant bellwether companies, when you look at those names versus some of the newer names and these new technologies, new things that have been introduced that consumers have really embraced and adopted, you can see the change in market cap size. And so some of our companies that we thought would never go away, those old blue chip names, combined in total, don't make up to be the same size as Apple is right now. So it really is interesting. And it's kind of a nice commentary on how society has changed and how consumer patterns have shifted and what we're buying.
Let's revisit the week on some of the things that drove the markets this week. Certainly the Fed meeting might have been one of them.
Certainly. And so the Fed meeting happened this week. The Fed meeting wound up on Wednesday, and there was no change in interest rates. That was largely expected by the market because at this particular Fed meeting, there was no press conference afterwards. And so usually when they go to change interest rates, they make sure to do it on a day when they do have a press conference after the meeting so that they can explain what they've done. So that was steady as she goes, kind of status quo per market expectations. And now the market will be waiting to see the minutes from that meeting that will come out in a couple of weeks. But right now we're holding tight. I think the Fed commentary, so we do see a written report after that meeting, came out and did talk about, you know, their positive outlook on the economy and kept expectations in place for additional interest rate increases in the coming months.
And we're still on track for two more. Is that the plan?
The plan is only the Fed knows the plan, but the expectation of the market is that there will be at least one and most likely two more before the end of the year, to be followed by another one or two in 2019. And so that is the expectation of the market right now. And we'll see how that plays out. We certainly had some economic data today that would support that continued increase.
The jobs numbers came in on Friday. 157,000 jobs were created last month, according to this report. But previous months were revised upwards. So I guess that perhaps bolsters that 157,000 a bit.
Well, that 157,000 number is important. That actually was a little bit low compared to what the street estimate was, which was closer to 190,000. But as you mentioned, that upward revision to previous months, where the June revision went from initially reported 213,000 to almost 250,000 jobs added, that made the whole report very positive overall and was accepted very well by the market. It then, with that kind of economy and people seeing jobs and job growth, then that also bolsters the message we heard from the Fed on Wednesday that gradual rate increases are warranted. So putting that together, we do have a lot of people who are back in the workforce. Our unemployment rate was, you know, below 4%. And so that is quite a low number. Our average hourly earnings didn't increase all that much. So that's actually a good sign. It shows that we're growing, but we're not stressing the economy yet. And so there's still enough labor to fill the positions. So we like that. But the average hourly earnings only increased about 0.3% month to month, or 2.7% year over year. Mm-hmm. So that's a gradual increase. That's something that companies can manage, because as my cost of labor goes up, obviously as a business hiring individuals, I want to make sure that I can control my costs. And that's something that the Fed looks closely at. How much is that creating a strain, or, and how much can companies flex to adjust for that as they go forward?
The other big news, or one of the other big news items of the week, was the ongoing tit-for-tat tariff battle, I guess if you want to call it that, where the president said he was going to, what was the number, $200 billion more worth of...
Well, so $200 billion of Chinese goods are now subject to a 25% tariff. The number previously floated was a 10% tariff, and that percentage went up this week. So that has caused some hesitation and concern in the market. Tariffs are a concern for market participants and investors because it's going to inhibit trade, and all that talk back and forth ultimately erodes confidence. And right now our markets are doing well, and individuals and investors are focused on earnings reports. We're still seeing actual results, tangible numbers that companies are reporting, how they're doing and how they think about the coming year. And so the market has been focused on the things that they can actually quantify. The tariffs have been a background concern. They can't quantify the impact yet because nothing's been settled. But the more it's talked about, the more of a concern it becomes. And so this week it was interesting because I think in the beginning of the week, when we saw that 10% jumped to a 25% tariff on Chinese goods. People got a little nervous, expecting some sort of retaliation. And obviously, the ultimate fear here is that we get into a trade war, which inhibits commerce. And that was bolstered by the fact that China responded this morning saying that they had another $60 billion of U.S. imports that they were then going to put tariffs on. So that tit for tat back and forth can be a concern to the market. Ironically, as China said that, messaging came out from the Trump administration that dialogue has been happening between the two countries. And there was concern that it had been at a standstill and no communication was going on. So the market actually took a lot of comfort that there was some talk going on. And I think that eased market tensions and concerns. And so the market was able to put the concern over tariffs aside as we went into the end of the week. And I think we're back to focusing on earnings as we close out this Friday.
Yeah, China's in an interesting spot in that the trade imbalance is so huge that it can't fire back as much as Mr. Trump is firing at them. It just doesn't have the bullets, I guess, if you want to use that analogy.
That is true. We are a much larger part of China's export than they are to us. And so that makes a difference. In fact, 18% of the U.S. imports are from China, but only 8% of our exports go to China. And so it's an interesting juxtaposition. Nevertheless, China can wield a lot of power and a lot of influence. And so tariffs on American goods going into China still impact us quite a bit. It is our largest trading partner. And so there's a reason that there's a growing concern among company management as to what this tariff war might bring.
Yeah, and although these are still proposed retaliations, it is impacting many sectors in different ways. Even today, I didn't look at the close, but Boeing and Caterpillar were both down. They're kind of trade-sensitive stocks. So it's not without consequence.
That's exactly right. There is a consequence to this. It is going to impact international commerce. It is going to impact our international companies, and that is a concern to the markets. And additionally, it impacts confidence. So what's interesting is that the markets and market performance really tracks with confidence levels of CEOs and management teams, and it's a very strong correlation. And so we don't want to have concern or a pullback in confidence, because that would imply that we're also going to get some sort of pullback and concern around investment in the markets. And so that's what I think the real danger is here, is that we prolong these discussions and there's so much concern over it, whether or not they're actually ever enacted, that it still has an impact on the market.
I wanted to ask you about something I'm not sure I know enough to ask the proper question or an intelligent question about, and that is bonds. I saw that that we were back above 3% this week.
Yes. So the 10-year Treasury was back above a 3% rate this week, and that is actually very significant. That north of 3% rate we have seen only fleetingly in the last 2 years. It's an indicator that we are confident that the economy is going well and that it is progressing. And so you want to see a healthy increase in interest rates. Right now, the Fed, when they raise rates, is only raising the very short-term rate on the curve. It hasn't been impacting that 10-year rate, which is more affected by the people moving in and out of long-term U.S. treasuries. Think of savings and actually other countries' institutional pension funds. When they want to move into cash, frequently they're looking for U.S. treasuries. That 10-year, I think, reflects more often a flight to safety. And so having it above 3% is a very good, healthy sign for the economy. There's been a lot of talk about interest curve inversion, and that would be where the short-term rates are above the long-term rates. Having that long-term rate bump up to that 3% level, it's been hovering between 280 and 290 recently. So having it rise up through that 3% level has been a really good sign that we're not seeing an inversion. The back end of the curve, that long end, is actually moving up.
Mm. Would money go from equities into that, or is it just not high enough?
It's not high enough yet. However, it will get to the point where people compare. You can get a dividend yield of 3%, but you take the risk of owning a company whose business is variable. Or I could buy a U.S. 10-year treasury and get a 3% yield. And there, the backstop is safety. There is no variability to operations. The backstop there is the U.S. government that will make good on that bond. And so it does play a part in the market, and we will see that as interest rates start to go up. It does make it a more viable option than being exposed to the equity market.
Well, speaking of money, China is doing things with its yuan that, I'm not sure of what they're doing and what it means, but it seems significant.
Well, it is, and that goes back into the trade discussion, what happens back and forth with trade. One of the things that has been concerning is the strength of the U.S. dollar, because as the U.S. dollar strengthens, our exports become more expensive to other countries and the consumers there who are purchasing them. China carefully watches the level of its currency versus other currencies, and so that's a whole nother discussion on currency manipulation. Does it happen? Does it not happen? Right now, we're seeing the balance between the two, and really the balance of the U.S. dollar against all of our trading partners. So as we watch that, the strength in the U.S. dollar has been concerning that it might, that alone might slow down trade because it's making the U.S. goods more expensive.
One more item, and that's oil, which also is impacted by the trade concerns, is it not?
Oil is always impacted by trade concerns. Oil has a lot of outside factors that can impact it. So manufacturing, a healthy economy, we assume that oil, primary energy source, is going to be used for that. If people get really negative on the economy, they're also concerned because they become negative on energy. We're going to need less of it. And we've seen that as people think about how the Chinese economy is doing, what the European economy is doing. That all has a sentiment factor to it that will impact the price of oil, on top of the sentiment factor that you get whenever there's disruption or unrest in the Middle East.
Yeah, speaking of the Middle East, I know the president is trying to isolate Iran and was hoping that China would cooperate by cutting its imports, oil imports, from Iran. Apparently, it's not going to do so, but also agreed not to increase its purchases from Iran. So it's an interesting dynamic when you combine that with the ongoing tariff battle between the president and the Chinese.
Yes, and extend that to the other side, because it's not just happening with China. That's also happening with Europe. So we have had some verbal volleys on tariffs and potential tariffs in between the U.S. and European countries and what we do with the EU. We've seen that. We've talked about it a little bit as the administration has addressed it in terms of steel and aluminum and now potentially autos. We've reached a somewhat of a detente there, but remember that the EU is also someone who wants to maintain and continue to have a dialogue with Iran. The president of the United States, President Trump, is trying to potentially back away and is talking about redoing sanctions. The EU has been in favor of maintaining the most recent agreement and allowing Iran to keep producing. So we're getting a confusing story here, not just from China, but from our not just from the East, but from the European allies as well.
Susan Schmidt, Senior Portfolio Manager for Westwood Holdings in Dallas. I thank you. I feel always so much smarter after I talk to you.
Well, you're very kind. Thank you for having me.
You are listening to The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. Orion Samuelson will be with us right after this.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Time to talk markets, and we talk markets with Paul Giorgi of Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, frequent guest with us here on the program to talk about markets. And I don't know where we start, Paul, because one day the markets are down, trade wars. Next day, they're easing. Market goes up. What do we believe?
Well, that's exactly right. What do we believe? And it's an everyday affair, and it's also what is impacting the markets. We get farmers calling us, asking us, well, what's going on? Well, it's this today. It might be trade wars, as you said, today. It might be weather forecast changes from the morning forecast to the noon forecast. So But it's really consolidating into a couple things, and that is the tariffs, how much news press gets it, how excited they get the trade, and the speculators in the trade. But in reality, the farmers have got, and for agricultural production, we've got a pretty good crop going this year.
And that's probably going to create an even bigger problem on how to market it. What are you telling farmers?
Well, right now, the farmer, the situation is that we hear, the farmer's got a lot of old crop corn that still needs to be moved, and soybeans, actually. And he's trying to figure out, do I sell it now? What do I do? Because I've got only a few more weeks, and I've got a new crop coming in that I got to find a place to store. So the real issue is, what does he do? And that is, I mean, the question is, does he sell it now? Does he hold it? Does he move it to town and put it under a basis contract or a deferred pricing contract? Which I would say, don't do that. It's just not the best way to go. You're better off selling it cash and re-owning it on the board somehow, using options, using some type of low-risk strategy that you can maintain ownership in case this tariff war is settled, which it could be at any moment. And if it is, I'm sure that would create a lot of excitement in the market and give us a nice price rally. So that's what we're all thinking about. That's what the farmer's thinking about as well. So I can't sell it because they might settle. And it's becoming a big problem for him that he needs to take action and do something.
Marketing by emotion doesn't work very well, does it?
It does not. And I've got a couple customers that I've worked with over the years, and he just told me the other day, he said, you know, we've been calm through this whole thing, he says, and we've got a philosophy and that working together, it says, whenever there's a, should we do something right quick because this happened? We always say, don't. Let's just take our breath and catch our breath here and wait and make a decision afterwards. If you're not prepared going in, you certainly aren't going to make the right decision during a situation like that.
We have been spending a lot of time talking about corn and soybeans, but suddenly wheat has become a big performer in the marketplace. What's going on?
Wheat's been kind of the sleeper in the grains lately. And it's been a quiet rally. Nobody really talks about it. We always talk about the tariff and the problems with soybeans and corn, the big crop that we've got coming. But wheat is the real problem. There is the world production, especially in Europe. This drought that Germany and Eastern Europe is having, Russia, it is a big factor when it comes to production and exports, because Russia is looking at potential decline in exports of 25% to 30% of a year ago. So that opens the door for more U.S. markets. We've also got South America that is deciding should they plant wheat and how the wheat crop is going down there. Australia is another, has some problems with productions. Some parts of it will lose a lot of wheat. Other parts will have big crops in Australia. So the real question is what is their balance sheet going to look like? But all in all, we still have a large wheat supply in the world. But I think one of the factors that we really don't talk about is that China, not buying soybeans and protein, they're trying to change rations in their livestock diets. One of the next highest protein levels is in wheat. So they're making some adjustments there. That's helping some consumption of wheat. I think wheat is pretty exciting. Another thing that we have is the wheat in the spring wheat in North Dakota and South Dakota area, Minnesota. The quality is not quite as good as what the trade was thinking earlier. We're seeing bushels per acre lower than what was anticipated. So I think that's wheat is the product also that has been sold by funds, and everybody has been selling wheat forever. We got some of that attitude changing, and that's helping support that price as well.
Let's come back to soybeans for a moment, because the situation with Brazil is going to be interesting. I've heard we may be exporting soybeans to Brazil in this thing.
Well, I think if China continues to buy all of Brazil's beans, they're going to need beans to feed their own livestock and the protein supply. So it might be a situation where we sell soybean meal there. We might sell soybeans to Brazil. I think that definitely is a possibility if this tariff continues to move on like it is right now with between the U.S. and China. But it's also going to be a price relationship. I mean, right now, Brazil beans are averaging anywhere from $40 to $50 a ton higher price than U.S. soybeans. And at some price relationship, the Chinese will need to come to the U.S. and buy beans because they're going to be cheaper, even with tariffs. So, and the Chinese can also, it's the tariff they're imposing on our beans, not us posing it on them as far as the soybeans go. So whenever they need food, they can make adjustments and they may come in and buy beans at some point in time because we will still be the store in the world where they can get good quality beans at any time.
Do you think the trade situation will cause Brazilian farmers to grow more beans next year?
Well, it sounds like it should. The problem that they're having is they've got transportation issues and they've got the economic issues within the country. So the cost of their production of soybeans has gone up. Moving soybeans from one location to another is really weight on the price of soybeans in Brazil. So the farmers aren't making as much money as you would think, and that's going to determine, are they going to plant a lot more beans or not? And they've got some infrastructure issues that are holding back that expansion of soybeans.
We have the August crop report a few days away, and I've always looked at that as our first realistic report, because up until this time, it's based on projections. But now we get planted acreage, we get weather, and we get the start of the crop. Are you looking for any surprises in that August crop report?
Well, I think the August crop report should give us higher yields. I think there's no question about that. The USDA is using a 174 yield for corn. I think that's probably going to increase. Our number is like 177. Other trade estimates have come in at 178 here just recently. A lot of the trade is saying, well, we could see way above record yields at 180, 183. So that is certainly a possibility. The weather is good, but I think this report is going to show probably some type of an increase on yield. Soybean yields the same way. We may not be at record yields for soybeans, but we certainly could be higher than what the USDA is using in their last report. So that will add to the bottom line on the balance sheet.
And finally, your reaction to the August crop report, is that one of the most important, or is it a month down the road that becomes more important?
The September one is probably going to be more important because we're going to get a much better look at what the crop is, what the quality of the crop is. Harvest will have begun and mature, although August is going to be probably more important than in other years because we've got crop that is already mature, dented. I've got customers that tell me they've got corn that's fully dented already, which they think they could be harvesting within about 3 weeks. So we've got a crop that has matured a lot earlier, which is going to give a little more importance to this August report, because the USDA does have people in the field looking at some plots and looking at corn. That makes the August report a little more advantageous this time. But we will have a lot of crop surveys in the meantime. Allendale's got their crop survey coming up here the third week of August. So that's going to be giving us a lot of important information and a lot clearer picture of what the September report might be and what kind of crop is really going to be there.
Always a pleasure to have you along to share your expertise. Paul Giorgi with Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois.
And that's this week's The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group. For Orion Samuelson, I'm Steve Alexander.